This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, what's wrong and what's right with American housing? Tonight's guest, William Slayton, public and private housing expert, executive vice president of Urban America Incorporated. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-4300. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. If Jose Diaz in Watts cannot find a decent place to live, says former Senator Paul H. Douglas, don't blame Congress. The fault lies with the affluent whites in the cities and suburbs, with local planners who silently submit to prevalent attitudes among the better-off citizens. In addition to the basic fact that it is a desire of affluent Americans to segregate themselves from the poor, and for whites to segregate themselves from blacks, a shortage of skilled labor and financing have also worked against the establishing of decent housing for some 40 million Americans now living in substandard units. The Housing and Urban Development Act of 1968 rededicates the nation to the proposition that every American, regardless of income, deserves, and we quote, a decent home and a suitable living environment, unquote. The bill hopes to provide 26 million units over the next 10 years, 6 million of these for low and moderate income families. This is an increase, but only a start toward the universally recognized goal. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is William Slayton, Executive Vice President of Urban America Incorporated, an independent nonprofit organization concerned with stimulating those public policies and private actions necessary to improve the quality of life in the nation's cities. Mr. Slayton, good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Mr. Slayton, let's begin our Night Call conversation tonight with a very simple question. What's wrong with housing?
Well, we don't have enough of it, and frequently it costs too much for the people who need it the most. And then when people can't afford it, sometimes they aren't able to acquire it because other people don't let them acquire it. That is, we have discrimination.
Among the reasons, as we stated earlier, for the lack of housing, we say that there's a shortage of skilled labor. Now, how short is this labor?
Well, I don't know that we have such a shortage of skilled labor. I think the labor problem is something else again. I think we'll produce the labor as long as we have the demand for the houses and we build the houses.
What about financing?
Well, when it comes to financing, if we're going to meet the Housing Act of trying to build 26 million units in the next 10 years, we've got to find new sources for financing the mortgages. This is a lot more money going into housing than we've ever had before. This year we'll build about 1.5 or 1.6 million units. So this is quite a step up.
Has public housing been a complete failure?
No, and that's really not quite the right way to put the question. Public housing has been quite a success, I think. I think the criticism of public housing goes not to the fact that it's public housing, but that we haven't done those other things that are necessary in dealing with low-income families, providing social services and counseling and all that sort of thing. Public housing has really been, I think, quite a success in providing decent housing for low-income families who would not have had decent housing.
Well, has public housing, in essence, been the concentration camps for blacks and Puerto Ricans and other minorities?
No. You've got to look at it historically. In the early days of public housing, it was not basically Negro housing at all. It was housing that included, the people who lived in public housing were middle-income families, well, not middle-income, but middle-class families who were down on their uppers. As the society has grown more affluent and the Negroes have been left more and more behind, well, then the Negroes have been more and more the people who have moved into public housing. so it's become, as a result of that, a concentration of Negro families. And that's unfortunate.
What happens to the thousands of people, especially the minorities who are displaced when new public housing is built? Do we actually take these people and give them a first shot at the new housing that's developing?
Not necessarily new housing, but I think that the relocation programs that have been established in the housing legislation back as long ago as 1949 have really put the government into the field of trying to help those families that are displaced because of public action. And as a result, on a pretty large scale, I would say, most of the families displaced end up in standard housing. It's really worked pretty well in that respect.
Mr. Slayton, are we being optimum optimists when we think about the possibility of housing everybody? Is there enough room to house everybody decently in the cities?
Well, I don't know what you mean by in the city. Certainly there's enough room to house everybody, and we have enough resources to house everybody. We don't quite have the system to do it, but our metropolitan areas are expanding and will continue to expand, and there's no reason in the world why we can't provide enough housing in our expanding metropolitan areas for all the people who need housing. No reason in the world.
Well, you said that this year we'll be building 1.6 million houses, is that right?
Yeah.
And yet we say that over the next decade we'd need something like 26 million. So that means that even at the start that we're a little bit behind.
Yes, we are behind. Not quite as much behind as those figures would indicate, because we have a crop of war babies coming up that will provide new family formations at a higher rate than we've had in the past. And also that 26 million over 10 years assumes we're going to get rid of all of our substandard housing. We're not quite as far behind as those figures would indicate, but we are behind. We have a lot of substandard housing we ought to get rid of.
What has been the rate of building since the war?
Well, let's see. The highest rate in the post-war years was, as I recall, I'm a little fuzzy in this, maybe about 1.7, 1.8 million. We are lower this year than the highest year we've had since the war. And in the past several years, we've been below 1.5 million units a year. We've been running considerably below a rate that we ought to have to take care of tearing down obsolete, deteriorated housing and providing new housing for people who need it.
Is it true that technologically we could build enough units, but much of the problem lies within the labor unions?
No, the labor unions are a problem, and in some instances on technological improvements, but our real problem is putting the research and development money into developing an industrialized housing system and getting manufacturers to produce it and then distributing it. We have it's a complex system of just building industrialized housing and setting up the rather complex mechanism for getting it built all over the United States. I think that if we really got an industrial housing system underway, that we would have an accommodation with the unions rather quickly, because the unions would be used in the production of the housing industrially.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation, What's Wrong and What's Right with American Housing. And our guest calling in tonight from Washington, D.C. is Mr. William Slayton, a public and private housing expert, as well as Executive Vice President of Urban America Incorporated. And before we go to our Night Call, listeners, a reminder to you that the sooner you call in, the sooner you'll have a chance to converse with Mr. Slayton or myself, as well as give your viewpoint on the American housing situation today. Our telephone numbers, if you're calling from New York, is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. If you're calling from the West Coast, it's area code 212-749-4300. That's area code 212-749-4300. And if you're calling from the East, you may call us at area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. We'll take our first call tonight, a local call from New York. Mr. Cave is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Cave?
Mr. Shields?
Yes, sir. Good evening. Your question.
Good evening. Good evening, you too. I'd like to ask Mr. Slayton this question. Did I pronounce that name correctly?
Yes, you did, sir.
Mr. Slayton?
Mm-hmm.
My question is in regards to a statement made by a certain Dr. Milton Friedman, who happens to be a noted economist currently teaching at the University of Chicago.
Right.
And in his book, Capitalism and Freedom, he has this measure on public housing. And he seems to feel that one of the reasons why the government has had to go into the business of creating public housing is in order to alleviate the neighborhood effects in regards to, as he says, are said to impose higher costs on the community in the form of fire and police protection. Mr. Freeman also feels, you know, that the government, why it has to go into public housing is in regards to this paternalism, saying that the people would not spend the money wisely if they were given cash. And he feels that if we need public housing so bad, that we should leave it up to individuals themselves, despite the neighborhood that they live in, you know,
mm-hmm.
if they're given the money to go out and buy their own housing.
Uh-huh.
And another argument he gives is that the number of dwelling units destroyed in creating new public housing seems to be much more than the dwelling units created.
Uh-huh.
That is, the amount of people replaced is less than the amount of people displaced.
Right.
And I'd like to ask your opinion in saying, is Dr. Freeman wrong, or just why has the government found itself having to go into the business, let's say, of creating public housing?
Well, you've got two basic questions. Let's go to the first one. I think that Dr. Friedman is a very good point. If we could devise a system so that we could get income into the hands of poor families so that they could make their own choices in the market, in the marketplace, rather than having housing built for them, we'd be much better off. We have to provide a system so that poor people have enough money to rent or buy houses. So it's a question of getting their incomes up to the point where they can afford housing. Public housing is a means of providing them with providing housing to those people who don't have enough money to acquire housing in the private market, good housing. So I would agree with him completely. If we could devise a system so they had enough money, I would like that much better than having to build special housing for poor people.
Mm-hmm. And also, to my second question, is does Dr. Freeman have it correct when he says that the number of dwelling units destroyed is much more than the number of dwelling units created?
Yes, he's referring basically to the urban renewal program. Two comments on that. I think he ought to look at the statistics a little closer than he has. When you when you're in the process of clearing an area and then fixing up the land with the new utilities and all of that, you have a period where you don't have anything on the land and you've destroyed housing units and you don't have any housing units to replace them. So on that land, you do not create new housing units just because of the time lag it takes to demolish and get new housing constructed. Secondly, in the urban renewal program, you don't always replace bad housing with new housing. Mm-hmm. The use of that land may be better for industry or for a shopping center or something like that rather than for housing. Mm-hmm. What he doesn't recognize in the program is that other housing on other sites is created through other governmental programs to provide housing for those displaced, such as public housing and a program called 221D3, which is a middle-income housing program.
Mm-hmm. Also, Mr. Shields, can I ask Mr. Slayton another question, please?
If it's short, sir.
Yes. referring also to the fact that these neighborhood
effects
proposed by Dr. Freeman in the form of extra higher rates of fire and police protection, and assume that the higher crime rate and all the gang rate, all that other stuff, all the sociological reasons given, you know, would public housing be a good enough reason for, would these reasons, these excuses, be good enough reasons for creating public housing, let's say in the ghetto areas, by the way?
Well, it's, this is often used as an example of why we ought to clear slums. And this is the original purpose of double purpose in public housing, to clear slums and to provide housing for the low-income families. And the statistics on crime and that sort of thing were cited as a reason for getting rid of slums.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's not that simplistic, of course. We have social ills within certain areas, certain neighborhoods, and you've got to apply comprehensive programs, not just a housing program, to solve those problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see that.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation, What's Wrong and What's Right with American Housing, our guest, Mr. William Slayton, Executive Vice President, Urban America Incorporated, calling in from Washington, D.C., and we'll return to our guest, Mr. Slayton, and more phone calls following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest, housing expert William Slayton, after station identification.
The most obvious symbols of today's affluent society are the outdoor barbecue and the sports car. The most incongruous is the rat. According to the 1960 census, more than 4 million urban dwellings were completely dilapidated. 3 million more were badly deteriorated. And another 2 million had serious code violations or were overcrowded. If building codes were enforced, most ghetto buildings would be boarded up. During the 1930s, we saved the farms from starvation. Now the cities need help before they die of neglect. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder.
Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest William Slayton of Urban America Incorporated about today's housing problems. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this time out to Bedford, Indiana, Mr. Walters is hearing Night Call over WFIU-FM. Mr. Walters?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Your question.
First, I'd like to tell you how much I enjoy your program. Being a Methodist and now a lay pastor, I certainly am intrigued by its nature.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'd like to say that being a native Southerner and having lived in the East and also now in the Midwest, it seems to me that there have been many projects that have been built by the federal government and other agencies. And I'm wondering, have they improved in their effectiveness and usefulness through the years, or has this declined in its ability to meet the need, and has that led to the type of development that you're talking about tonight?
Mr. Slayton?
Just trying to interpret that a little bit. I would say that over the years, the federal programs have expanded in terms of quantity of housing built and also in terms of the kind of assistance offered for families of varying income. We started out with a public housing program back in 1937. We didn't get a middle income housing program until 1961. I would say that the public housing projects, the middle income housing projects, the urban renewal projects that have housing as their reuse, particularly the latter, have created much greater desegregation than we've ever had before, and they've been quite successful on the whole.
Well, another question. I've purchased homes in Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And I found in two different situations there in relatively small towns that it was very difficult to find any housing in the price range that suited me. And the difficulty was that in order to get a house that I consider to be of good standard and of reasonable living quality, I had to pay much more than what seemed to be an equitable price. Will your program or your ideas alleviate this situation any in terms of middle income? And what do you consider to be a middle income person?
Well, it varies, of course, from area to area, depending upon the income levels within that area. In a small community in Mississippi, it'd be considerably lower middle income than it would be, of course, in New York City. But I think that the kind of problem you stated is a universal problem for middle-income families. We have our housing costs now are really greater than most middle-income families can afford. And we've got to have special kinds of programs to put this kind of housing within the reach of middle-income families. That's why I think the middle-income housing program adopted by Congress in 61 and the middle-income housing programs adopted by Congress this year will help considerably in that respect.
Well, that sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. Out to Loveland, Colorado, Mr. Gothwaite is hearing Night Call over WLOV-FM. Mr. Gothwaite?
Yes, good evening, Dale.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, it's KLOV-FM, west of the Mississippi. I guess they use K's. But let me make one. Can I make one real quick comment to you? Don't forget that when you're giving those telephone numbers, that there's an area between the East Coast, the Midwest, and the West Coast. You say, and the number to call on the West Coast is, you know, between New York and Los Angeles, or Chicago and Los Angeles, there's a big area, and Colorado's in there.
All right.
Okay, for my private bag. But I'd like to ask your guest tonight, what programs are there underway at this time specifically as to relating private industry to this problem, letting private industry become more greatly involved in, let's say, the providing of income, of housing, that is, for low and middle income families?
Well, the legislation just passed this year sets up a program. The section number is 235, which makes it possible for low and moderate income families to buy housing on their own. And this housing is built by private enterprise, and it's financed through the regular mortgage mechanism, and the federal government, in effect, subsidizes the interest rate down to as low as 1%. So this is done through the private mechanism completely, except for the subsidy of the interest rate. And there's also another program which does the same thing, but that's for rental housing. This is Section 236. But the private industry builds it, and they finance it privately, but the interest rate is subsidized.
Well, then the only limitation as far as the cost factor is the limitation on interest. There's no reduction in building costs.
Well, no, there's no reduction in building costs. There are some limits that the federal government has put on these programs. The mortgage cannot exceed a certain amount. But to the purchaser or to the renter, his monthly payments are reduced because he's paying at the rate of 1%. And to the renter, he pays 25% of his income, and the difference between 25% of his income and the economic rent is made up, in effect, by the subsidy on the interest rate.
Right. I had heard of a program. I did hear this from official circles, but I say I did not. But I have heard of a program where certain, let's say, private enterprise factions that are under government contract for different projects other than housing have been enticed to, under some sort of program, and I'm not certain about this, you might clarify this, to provide at reduced cost certain basic building materials, such as concrete and glass, this type of thing.
No, I've not heard anything like that. No, I don't know that at all, about that at all.
Well, I'd heard this, and so I have to look in a little deeper. Second question, quickly, is this housing that's proposed, you say we want to clear the ghettos, is this housing proposed in or outside of these ghetto areas, the geographic areas?
Well, it can be any place. The emphasis is on building new housing. For this year, Congress has said that only 25% of this housing, purchase housing anyway, sales housing, can be existing housing, and the balance has to be new housing. And that means primarily that it's going to be out in the on the periphery of cities rather than in ghetto areas.
What problems do you foresee in this? Do you think it would be wiser to perhaps utilize the comprehensive upgrading program within the ghetto area itself than to, well, in effect, transplant these people?
Well, transplant's the wrong word. I think that the whole emphasis ought to be on providing a much greater range of choice, which is not available now. I think it would be wiser if we applied this primarily to existing housing so that a poor family, wherever he is, can select the house he wants, so long as it doesn't exceed a certain cost, wherever he wants to live.
Well, this would certainly be conducive to getting away from this segregation, or de facto segregation, just because of economic limitation.
Amen. I couldn't agree more.
Right. And thirdly, again, quickly, related programs, what related programs are there to upgrade these other situations? You know, you can't change a man's income or things like that, or even his feelings, his attitude, just by moving him. It'll help, but what other related programs are there that are going to be used in conjunction with this upgrade in housing?
Well, of course, there are the jobs program to train those who aren't able to get a job right now and giving them a skill. There are educational programs. There is the Model Cities program, which is aimed at improving very, very large neighborhoods and to provide social services to help those people in those neighborhoods to help themselves.
Are there facets in these programs, in these building programs, whereby black Negro labor, perhaps unemployed labor in the construction field, is involved in the actual building of these things? Or is this, again, going to be the union problem?
Well, there is, in this present legislation, a strong requirement that local labor within the neighborhood, which would mean in inner city neighborhoods, black labor, be employed in the building of these projects. And this is going to take some doing, but the emphasis is on trying to employ those people in the area.
Right. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for calling, sir. Mm-hmm. Mr. Slayton, here in New York, there are, I understand, something like 800,000 deteriorated apartments, or I suppose would be considered substandard housing units. And across the nation, there's an estimated something like 6 million substandard housing units. Now, in this estimate of 1.6 million houses that you project will be built over the next year, what percentage of that will be the removal of the deteriorated houses?
Oh, I can't give you that figure. I just don't know. I would say a relatively small percent. I'm just trying to think of what the annual destruction, demolition of substandard housing is, and I just don't recall that figure, but a relatively small amount.
So we will still be faced, even with building new houses, we'll still be faced with a large percentage of substandard housing.
Yes, the real problem is that until we get a lot of new housing, we still need that substandard housing because people live in it, and it's the only thing they can afford. That's why it's so important to build as much new housing for low and moderate income families as possible so they can get out of deteriorated housing and that housing can be torn down.
Well, when we talk about public housing and we talk about private housing, now, how public is private housing?
Well, private housing is is public only in the sense that if it's built under FHA, the mortgage amount is guaranteed. The mortgage is insured by FHA. Under some other private programs, the interest rate will be subsidized for the renter or for the purchaser, but it's pretty much private, except for public housing.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation, What's Wrong and What's Right with American Housing, and our guest calling in from Washington, D.C. is Mr. William Slayton, a public and private housing expert, as well as Executive Vice President of Urban America Incorporated. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Slayton, following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest housing expert William Slayton after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a bishop of the Episcopal Church who believes you can communicate with the dead, the first vice president of the Republic of New Africa, the NAACP attorney who was fired for criticizing the Supreme Court, a doctor who wants to legalize abortion, and a Jew who says hurting Whitey doesn't help the black man. Monday, the Right Reverend James A. Pike, Is There Life After Death? Tuesday, Milton Henry. He says Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina should be turned over to the black man right now. Wednesday, Lewis Steele. He says the 9 men in black think white. Thursday, Dr. Robert Hall. He wants to legalize abortion. And Friday, Nathan Perlmutter of the American Jewish Committee on Black Anti-Semitism. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest William Slayton of Urban America Incorporated about today's housing problems. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And out to New Orleans, Mr. Campbell is hearing Night Call over WDSU. Mr. Campbell? Good evening.
Good evening. I would like to ask Mr. Slayton, what can be done to better educate the people in the inner city?
What can be done to better educate the people in the city?
Inner city.
In the inner city?
Yes.
Well, educate them how, sir? And to what?
To the extent that they will have more concern to advance themselves in life.
Well, this is a very complex question that I don't know that I'm an expert on. I wouldn't try to pose myself as an expert. Clearly, the quality of the schools has to be improved considerably. I think that our inner city schools are pretty bad. Secondly, I think that we have to make it clear that there is economic opportunity for people living in the inner city in American society, that they aren't going to be excluded from it. And this is something I think we all have to work on very, very hard. And I think that's one of our major problems.
Thank you for calling, sir.
All right.
Thank you. Out to Fort Worth, Texas, Mr. Ford is hearing Night Call over KNOK FM. Mr. Ford?
Yes.
Your question, sir.
I would like to ask Mr. Slayton two questions, if I may. The first one, what happens to the people who are living in substandard housing during the interval between the actual tearing down of these houses and the building of new complexes? Where do these people live? What happens to them? The second question is, you've mentioned middle-income people. What do you mean actually by middle-income? In certain areas, one particular standard of income may be considered as middle. But say like New York or Chicago, that same income level may push you in an entirely different class.
Well, let me answer the last one first, the second question first on what's a middle-income family. I think the easiest way is to say that in a particular area, in a city, it includes those families who earn less than the median family, the middle family, in the whole range of incomes within that city. So in the Southwest, in the Fort Worth area, it would be considerably less than in, say, the New York City area or the Washington, D.C. area.
Right.
You have to think of the area when you talk about a middle-income family. Now, in the first question, what happens to the people who are in substandard housing when they're displaced and that housing is torn down? And in the interim, while the new housing is being built. First off, they generally don't move into the new housing because a family doesn't like to move very often, and once they move, they like to stay where they are. But when they are displaced because of an urban renewal program or a public housing program, they have their moving expenses paid. They cannot be evicted from where they live until they are offered a decent, safe, and sanitary house or an apartment at a rent that they can afford or a purchase price that they can afford. And they get, as I said, moving expenses and then some initial help in financial help in moving into their new quarters. Generally, the experience has been that these families have ended up in standard housing and in much better neighborhoods than they were before.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. Mm-hmm. Out to Detroit, Michigan, Mr. Nyson, who's hearing Night Call over WJLB. Mr. Nyson, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Shields. Mr. Slayton, can you tell us something about your credentials for making the statements that you're making? Especially the ones you just made just now about what happens to people who are displaced by urban renewal projects.
Well, I don't know if you want to depend upon my credentials. Let me give you another credential, not mine, but
your source for making these statements. Is your organization itself been actively working in the area of urban renewal, and particularly in the cities? You know, familiar with that particular aspect of it and know what is happening to the people who are displaced by urban renewal projects?
Yes, yes. The Department of Housing and Urban Development asked the Bureau of the Census to come in and make an independent survey of families who had been displaced by urban renewal. And the Bureau of the Census went out and to cities where the urban renewal was taking place and went through the files. The renewal agency, has to keep the file in every family that's displaced. And then they went out and checked the places where these people lived and examined the character of the places in which they lived, the rents they paid, and all of that sort of thing. And they came up with the conclusion that about 92% of the families displaced ended up in a standard housing that was considerably better, of course, than the housing that they'd been in. This was an independent survey by the Bureau of the Census. It's available, by the way, from the federal government.
This is unbelievable to me, sir.
I know it's very typically of a lot of people to believe, but it's really the truth.
And I would say that it isn't the truth. It cannot be the truth. And all you have to do is look around you.
Well, you see, there's quite a lot of displacement that comes about through some other kinds of programs.
Right.
And people don't realize that it's not because of urban renewal, but because of something else.
Right. Well, of course, you see, urban renewal procedures are used to, in effect, move poor people and Negroes out of the way of expressways, out of the way of public facilities like schools, and out of the way of luxury high-rise apartment buildings. I don't know if that's considered a urban renewal project, but typically, downtown Detroit, for example, Lafayette Park, the area lay bare for 20 years. The people who were moved out moved to the next nearest place, like gypsies with their mattresses on their backs. And they displaced the people who were living there, who went into another wave just a little bit further. And the waves carried on and on until the affluent whites moved into the suburbs. And I think that kind of pattern is not untypical of most large cities.
Well, you got Lafayette Square with whites and Negroes living in Lafayette Park.
That's right. Lafayette Park with whites and Negroes are white doctors, white lawyers, Negro doctors, and Negro lawyers. You see, the fact that they're black doesn't mean that they can't be affluent, and they happen to be upper-income people.
And you've got a lot of public housing in Detroit, too.
It's a farce. Mr. Slayton, I don't want to argue with you, and I don't want to... I'm very upset about this whole thing because the statistics themselves are, in my opinion, so unreliable that they shouldn't be quoted. The census, for example, let me give you the example. 1960 census actually missed at least 10% of the Negro population in the United States.
That's irrelevant to the point that the Census Bureau made a specific survey with specific families.
Well, it may be true in other cities, but they cannot. It simply is not true in Detroit. And
it's very difficult for people to believe the truth sometimes, even because they don't want to.
Well, maybe so. I hope I'm wrong. But the
you ought to take a look at that. Just read it because I think it's a very informative document.
The United States Census figures. Census Bureau has those figures.
Yes, it's a publication put out by HUD, the Housing Department of Housing and Urban Development, but it was done by the Bureau of the Census.
But you do raise a very significant point on perhaps something that we should go into for just a moment. When we talk about the displacement of people in many instances under the guise of urban renewal. Now, can we talk generally about people just being displaced for many of the reasons that you already stated and where they are not always being displaced or being moved out of the area because of housing? Are there any figures, Mr. Slayton, that you might have in that direction? What percentage of people...
displaced by programs other than urban renewal?
Right.
Well, I'll just have to give you some off-the-cuff stuff and some statistics I remember for a couple of cities where the displacement because of public highways, expressways, was about double, as I recall, what it was for urban renewal. And, of course, there's displacement for schools, as was mentioned, and that sort of thing also. Then there's just private displacement by private developers who buy up property and then tear it down and build up something else. And this all gets lumped together as relocation. And there's no governmental program in many instances to deal with these families that are displaced.
But when we talk about urban renewal, do we actually mean Negro removal?
Well, it very often means that dealing with slum areas, that the majority of the people living in that area, slum area, are Negroes. And it means that these Negroes are offered places to live outside of that area. But it does mean that a good many Negroes do end up moving.
Ms. Nyssen?
Mr. Shields, just one other statement here. Mr. Slayton, in Detroit, there is not presently today one single urban renewal project that is anywhere within the semblance of completion wherein poor people or the less than what you would call middle-income people, and I wish you would define that in some way, will be able to move into standard, decent housing. Now, what you are talking about, when you're talking about people being removed from urban renewal areas and going into standard areas, mm-hmm. that's what it says in the guidelines. That's what it says by HUD regulations. But I'll be darned if I can find that happening anywhere in Detroit, and I don't even see, in all the years we've had urban renewal in Detroit, I haven't yet seen one single unit for low-income people being built. And the last time we had any public housing in Detroit, I can't remember when it was, at least 15 years or more. And that is even less than low-income, you know what that is.
Well,
this is welfare in ABC. I mean, it isn't even income. It's hardly existence.
Well, let me ask you, I must say, I don't know the Detroit area well enough to discuss it with you in detail, but there's a area adjacent to Lafayette Park.
Elmwood.
Elmwood. Now, they're building, as I understand, a deal of middle-income housing in there.
Well, let me let the cat out of the bag. Middle-income housing is for people who are making $15,000 a year or more.
No,
that's what
true.
They have to have in order to live in Elmwood.
Well, that's not the middle-income housing portion.
Well,
portion
that's
of Elmwood,
what it is.
No, just to make sure that you understand this, people, $15,000 is not a middle-income family, obviously.
That's what
in
they
Detroit,
have.
In Detroit, probably a middle-income family would run about $7,000 or $8,000, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, there isn't any such place being built or even heard of yet. And the project that they have on the planning board, which is intended for such income, the people don't even know if they'll be able to live there. They don't know when they're going to get out of the area they're in. This problem is atrocious, and if there isn't some more realistic thinking and action and planning being done immediately, and this 26 million units, I just can't see it at all. It just is completely unrealistic. I don't see how in the world they're going to help to rebuild the areas that need rebuilding, which is the substandard housing. It's not
replacing people. How are you going to get rid of substandard housing without getting the people up? You've got to think through and not try to have it and not condemn something because you can't do something when you want to do something else. If you're going to tear down substandard housing, there has to be people.
There is a humane way of doing it.
Hold on. You have to be able to displace people, and then you have to be able to build housing so that the people can move into that housing.
Right.
And the only program we have for low-income families is public housing, which you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Mr. Nyssen?
Not only I don't like it, but they don't like it, and they won't stand for it. And, I'll tell you...
Mr. Nyssen? Mr. Nyssen, I want to thank you so much for calling, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Out to Toledo, Ohio, Mr. Hughes is hearing Night Call over WCWA. Mr. Hughes?
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I enjoy your program very much, and I am very gentleman before was very enthusiastic, but I have a couple questions I would like to ask Mr. Slayton. He mentioned earlier in the program about the program that the federal government was putting through about helping low and middle income families to secure housing by subsidizing the interest rates on this. Now, in this area, we have yet to hear of any such program. That is why I'm calling now. Is there any means available whereby I can find out by what source I can secure information on this 235,
yes.
I think he...
235.
235, yes.
235, that's for sales housing. This was passed just this summer by Congress, and it's just being put into effect. Money was just appropriated for the program just before the election, when Congress went into recess, or adjourned. And just write the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Washington, D.C., and ask them about it, and they'll send you information on it. Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Oh boy, I got the new man in charge of that.
Well, I don't think that Romney will be there for a while. He won't be there until January 20.
They have to build new housing for the new cabinet.
Department of Housing and Urban Renewal.
Department of Housing and Urban
Development.
Department of Housing and Urban Development, Washington D.C. Area code 20410.
The reason I ask this, about 9 years ago, purchased a home in this area under the GI Bill. And I have tried numerous ways of possibility of transferring that GI, but I can't do it in any way. And the new homes that they are building now are way above the range that they were when I purchased my original home, which puts the payments clear up in the $135 to $150 a month bracket, which is far out of reach of my present income. And that's why I called you tonight, and I'm interested in this. And of course, I agree that the in this area, I know that they're going quite extensively on the housing program for low and middle income, as they call it. But still, the price ranges run clear out of the range of a middle income bracket family. And
quite. But this, of course, reduces the payment.
Yes.
With the reduction of the interest rate. And best thing to do is to write the department, and they'll send you the information on it.
Okay, sir, and I won't take up any more of your time. I know there's a lot of others waiting, so thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you.
Good night.
Housing in America is our conversation tonight with our guest, Mr. William Slayton. We'll return with more calls following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest housing expert William Slayton after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, the first major riot and killings and burnings of the Second American Revolution took place 3 years ago in Watts. One of the healthiest after effects to come out of them was the Watts Writers' Workshop, a forum to develop intellectual leadership in the community that also provided a medium for homegrown Watts writers to get their creations before the public. It was the brainchild of novelist-screenwriter Bud Schulberg. And just this past weekend, the Watts Writers' Workshop mounted its first New York City theatrical production. Big-time Buck White, says the New York Times, has arrived for a long, long stay. From the ashes of Watts, a major creative contribution to American theatrical literature, and how it happened, with novelist-playwright Bud Schulberg, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest William Slayton of Urban America Incorporated about today's housing problems. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And our next Night Call listener is calling in from Des Moines, Iowa, and he's hearing Night Call over KRNT, Mr. Hansen. Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Mr. Slayton, I have known an economist in Washington, D.C., and have read of some who have in their studied opinion, said that it's cheaper to build new cities than it is to rebuild old cities. Now, it's true that, it must be true that we need 26 million units in the next, I forgot how many years. And it's also true that there are portions of old cities that need to be rebuilt. But if we need so many new units, why can't we make more of an effort to why can't the government make more of an effort then to direct some of their efforts to encouraging new development outside or in the periphery of metropolitan areas, and especially in the light of what seems to me to be a more local neighborhood interest in rehabilitation rather than renewal, that is, where the use is acceptable, where residential is acceptable, as opposed to industrial or residential. In other words, the rehabilitation seems to be palatable locally, and we've gone through some projects like Mill Creek area, urban renewal area in St. Louis that was totally demolished, where the townhouse, the townhouses that were in that area were in the main either substandard or in need of rehabilitation, and the new units that are being built are almost exactly the same architect type houses. They're almost exactly the same building type, of course, with other auxiliary uses. So we seem to be spending a great deal of money to rebuild areas of existing towns. Washington, D.C. in the southwest area, and Collier, I understand, were extremely expensive projects and couldn't possibly be done without the urban renewal hedge on the purchase and preparing the site for a rehabilitation.
Well, quick comments. Mill Creek in southwest Washington, those areas were really very bad areas. They were really beyond rehabilitation. They had to be cleared. Your choice is just to let those areas stand as horrible slum areas, and you let that spread and spread and spread, or to tear those houses down and put up something in their place. The cost is in acquiring the houses and tearing them down and putting in the new sewers and that sort of thing, new water mains that have to be paving the streets and that sort of business. Now, it's not really cheaper to build on the outskirts, because you have to provide all those things in the outskirts as well. The only cheaper part is that you don't have to acquire existing housing and tear it down. But you also, if you abandon the central city, you're abandoning quite a capital investment in all of the expenditures that are made heretofore to build up the streets, the sewers, and the and all of the public facilities, the fire stations, police stations, all the other things that you need in these central city areas. But at the same time, I think we have to build in periphery, in the periphery of our metropolitan areas. I hope we can build some new towns. Our expansion has to come on the outskirts, but I don't think we can just let the central cities go to pot. And you can't rehabilitate all deteriorated structures. You just have to tear a good many of them down.
Well, there's no question that in some areas of Mill Creek, for instance, it was entirely substandard and almost irretrievable, but some areas out near St. Louis University were reasonably suitable for rehabilitation, and I think at least they were.
Well, sometimes exteriors are deceiving.
Uh-huh.
You look at a brick structure and it looks pretty good, and yet it's really rotten inside, and
uh-huh.
The cost of rehabilitation frequently exceeds the cost of new construction in cases like that.
Yes, that's true, and as a matter of fact, in Des Moines today, there are some who are meeting up with this fact in a rehab area where they're being met with a proposal for rehabilitating their house for $7,000 to $9,000, where they have already purchased a house that's only worth $10,000, and it's on contract, and they had to pay $12,000 to get it. They were Negro and had to pay a premium.
Yeah.
And now we're faced with this exorbitant rehabilitation. Most of these are frame structures and need a heck of a lot more done to them than what some brick townhouses were in the good parts of Mill Creek out near St. Louis.
Did you say rehabilitating a frame structured house?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. There are a lot of good frame houses that could be rehabilitated.
Yeah, it's very possible to do it, except it's extremely expensive, and some of these people are going to have to give up their houses and their contract, and anything they've got into the contract, because they can't possibly afford the $7,000 to $9,000, even though it's at a lower interest rate.
Mr. Hanson, thank you for calling, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Out to Providence, Rhode Island, Mrs. Cashman is hearing Night Call over WLKW-FM. Mrs. Cashman?
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
How about letting the ladies go first?
Ladies, what do you mean, go first?
Excuse me. Excuse me, please. I didn't hear that.
I said, what do you mean, let the ladies go first?
Well, the men have been talking for an hour now, and I have to sign off at 12:30, but I'm going to say my piece.
Okay.
We're feeling the pinch here in Cranston, Rhode Island. That's where I hail from, and I think it's a pretty great state, but I'd like to move out, too, and I'm a suburbanite. And I think I'd like to direct my question to Mr. Slayton, please.
That was Mr. Slayton on the line.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I didn't mean to insult him. I trust him. and I think he's an honest man. I heard him make a few remarks like, I don't know, I don't recall that figure. And I think those are the basic ingredients of friendship. I don't know any more right now, but I'll learn. And also, I have a lot of kinetic ability. And as I'm just bubbling over at this point. I have two children, and they're both little girls. And my husband and I love them. And that's another ingredient, too, if you want to put it that way, that love. I'm no hippie. I live very well. I can't complain about too much. We're happy. We're healthy. And I just say, look around you. Just look around and have a little patience. Because I know, as a mother, I've had to have quite a bit. And as a wife, I would like to go out to work. But I'm staying home with my family and rearing them. When they're both in school, then I will go to work. Mr. Slayton, do you have any comment to make on that?
I have two girls, too.
How do you like that?
Well, I would like to make a comment, Mrs. Cashman. I think the position that you're in, that millions of other women would like to be in.
I think you have it pretty good.
So I'm voicing the feminine behalf. And I'm not...
And those who are well off.
No, you're not right. I'm sorry. My husband makes a terrific salary for a 22-year-old. I will be 22, the 23rd of December. And we're pulling our hair out trying to make ends meet. So the more you make, the more you blow up. So we've cut down in every way possible. We've closed all charge accounts except one and one gas credit card. I realize that many people don't even have this. But just look around you. Just look around and see all the illness. We've had 5 years of it, and I've been married 5 years. And I had children a year after I was married, a child, rather. And I had another little girl 2.5 years later. And my oldest is 4 in March, and my little one is 14 months tomorrow. Now, if I wasn't such a patient woman, I wouldn't remember anything, would I? But I have a power of recall. At least I can look back sometimes when the getting gets too rough. And I just have to relax. I've been told I have to.
Well, I remember my early days, too, when I was 22, struggling.
Those were very good days. Excuse me, sir.
You were about to say, Mr. Slayton?
I said I remember my early days, too, when I was 22 and struggling to make ends meet.
That's right. I'm glad you do.
Well, we thank you very much for calling, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you, and good
Bye-bye.
Luck. Mr. Slayton, we still have the problem of some 6 million substandard housing, and just in the remaining 20 seconds that we have left, do you see any hope for them? For the hope for the removal of them, I should say.
Yes, I see hope for their removal. I think we have to recognize it's going to take time. We have to create a much larger housing supply for low and moderate income families, so that they can move out of the deteriorated housing. It can be torn down. But
Mr. Slayton, we thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York. Tonight, our conversation, American Housing, our guest, Mr. William Slayton. This is Del Shields in New York. Thank you. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, novelist, screenwriter Bud Schulberg and the Watts Writers Workshop. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.